the way. Let's call our next case, which is case number 63444, Las Vegas Sands Corporation versus District Court. Mr. Jacobs is real party in interest. Again, Mr. Morris representing the petitioners, Mr. Bice representing the real property interest, and Mr. Pizzanella is here as well. I'm sorry, I didn't notice that at the beginning of the previous case. Okay, Mr. Morris, you may proceed on behalf of the petitioners here. And I might comment maybe to pick up on the last argument where we left out. Mr. Bice pointed out under Valley Health that we can have writ petitions proper when you, if privilege is an issue here. So I assume that would be the basis of why you believe we should entertain this writ because of the privilege issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me hang on a second. Make sure we got the Loki on the timer. So.
Okay. Great.
Well, then, just a moment.
Take your time.
You have this one.
I didn't give each side enough time to set up. Go ahead and be at ease, and you can set everything up.
What brings us here today is another order of the District Court. It's a June 29, 2013 order that compelled Sands China to relinquish its claim and allow the turnover of more than 11,000 scheduled privileged documents that were the subject of the privilege law that had been identified in accordance with a court-ordered protocol to Stephen Jacobs. These are documents that were culled from and identified as privileged from among the hundreds of thousands of documents that Mr. Jacobs took with him when he departed employment by Sands China.
Now, was Mr. Jacobs entitled to view these documents while he was employed by Sands China?
Yes, he was. He could look at those documents while he was employed by Sands China, and in point of fact, he did. And apparently, he decided that because he could look at them while he was a member of Sands China, or was the CEO of Sands China, and the District Court seemed to accept that proposition, he then took those documents and a lot more with him. He didn't disclose that to us, and we didn't learn the extent of what he had taken until long after he had departed, and he had turned those documents over to his lawyers. And at that point, we then objected. We objected to him having those documents. We claimed that those were our documents. In fact, we even filed a lawsuit to recover those documents from him because we said they were our property. That's one of the things that the respondents say. We failed to tell you in our papers because, and that's true. We didn't tell you about that second lawsuit in Delilah because we negotiated the dismissal of that lawsuit to address the privilege issues that those documents and that taking of documents produced in this lawsuit. And it is that activity that brings us here today. So, all of these documents were in the possession of Mr. Jacobs. We wanted those documents returned to us, and we wanted to block the discovery by him and giving to his lawyers to use offensively against us in this lawsuit. We wanted to prohibit that, and we did so by first looking at struggling for months to get permission to access those documents. And we did in June 2012. We got some access to those documents, and along about the end of the year in 2012, we then examined those documents. We identified 11,000 of the hundreds of thousands of documents that were examined, we identified 11,000 of those documents as privileged. And we tendered those documents along with a list of what they were and a privilege log explaining why they would be, why we were claiming that they were privileged. And we gave that to the district court. And then the district court thereafter decided that, well, and it may be because, as Mr. Weiss attributes to her, she was frustrated or piqued. I don't know why. What she said was, you are going to have to turn these documents over to Mr. Jacobs and his lawyers, and her order says, to support his claims and to rebut the counterclaims that are made against him in this case. So he is going to be allowed to use these documents offensively against you, but they are privileged documents. There are documents, and she acknowledges that in her June 29 order. She says, assuming these documents are privileged, Sands China cannot prohibit Mr. Jacobs from examining those documents and using them because he had access to them when he was there, and he has had access since he left employment and took those documents with him, without our permission, and I might add, without our knowledge. That's 40 gigabytes of information. That is, if you translate it into pages, hundreds of thousands of pages.
What actually are you asking us to do in this this writ?
Pardon me?
What would you like us to do in this writ? What is your position as to what we can do now? He's seen the documents. The lawyers have seen the documents. I mean, don't say the horse is out of the barn. I mean, what would we do if we were to find in your favor in this case?
What would we do?
Yes.
We would vacate, we would direct the vacation of the June 29 order. Mm-hmm. Because that order is based on the proposition that Mr. Jacobs, although it's not clearly articulated, it appears to be based on the proposition that Mr. Jacobs was a joint client with Sands China when he was employed by the company. And that's just simply a mistake. Mm-hmm. He wasn't. The documents we're talking about, the horse is not completely out of the barn here, Your Honor. The documents we're talking about have not been turned over to his lawyers. That's what we want to prevent. This document, this June 29 order says, you, the client, who has the privilege, the judge recognized that privilege, who has the privilege to prevent the disclosure of these documents by any person, nevertheless must be turned over to Mr. Jacobs and his lawyers for use against you in this litigation because, the judge said, he is within the sphere, these are her words, sphere of persons who can access privileged information after he has departed the employment, apparently by virtue of the fact that he took the documents with him.
Mr. Morris, is there any authority from the Ninth Circuit or the United States Court about this concept of the joint client and somehow waiving the privilege?
There isn't in your court, Your Honor, or this court. There isn't such a thing. There is, however, authority in Nevada. It's in Nevada Federal District Court, and, you know, Magistrate Judge Valerie Cook in the East Shepherd versus Montgomery case. She confronted, and he wrote an opinion, we discussed and cited that opinion. She wrote an opinion on facts that are remarkably like ours. In that case, a former officer of the corporation left the corporation and got into a lawsuit with it. And he claimed that he was entitled to access to the company's documents that he had access to when he was an employee of the company. And the court, after a considerable discussion, and in particular looking at the United States Supreme Court's decision in the Mantrop case, said that is not true. The privilege is not lost, and it can't be invoked by a dislocated manager or officer of the company. The privilege remains with the corporation. That's all we're addressing here.
Now, that case, yeah, we're familiar with that case. It was just, I assume it ended there at the, she was a magistrate, but it ended at the U.S. District Court level. It never,
it didn't go beyond that. But I might add, Your Honor, that there are a number of cases, not the least of which is the Weintraub case that I discussed with you a moment ago, in which that very issue was addressed. And the courts have held that unless we're dealing with a situation in which the company is suing one of its former officers, and these documents are pertinent to that, or it's suing its lawyer, who was formerly employed by the company, the fact that an officer leaves the company, a manager leaves the company, and takes with him documents, does not mean that he can use those documents against the privilege that remains with the corporation that employed him, his former employer. And that is, in a nutshell, is what the district court had to say on that subject.
Has the judge seen 11,000 documents?
Pardon me?
Has the judge seen the documents?
No, the judge didn't review the documents. The judge didn't do anything. The judge didn't say, remember we're only here for jurisdictional purposes? The judge didn't say, there has been a showing, or I make a finding, that these documents, or anything in them, is relevant to, or significant to, the jurisdictional hearing I'm about to convene. She didn't make such a finding. And I'm not going to examine those documents. Because, she said, in her order, because Sands China did not establish that Jacobs could not have access to those documents. That's an incomprehensible statement. But on the law, of course we objected to him having those documents. We were trying to get them back. We were trying to prevent their disclosure on privilege grounds with sufficient laws and schedules to indicate the basis for every invocation of privilege. We're trying to prevent those disclosures to Mr. Jacobs' attorneys to use against us in this litigation, and we're entitled to do that. The United States Supreme Court says we're entitled to do it. Mm-hmm. Each Shepard, I admit, hasn't gone up to the circuit, and the judge in that case admitted there wasn't Ninth Circuit authority directly on point. But the judge did say that in each record, the judge did say that the privilege to prevent the disclosure of documents or access to documents after employment terminates remains with the client. It doesn't go with the employee. And that is entirely consistent with NRS 49095. Mm-hmm. And the law of privilege that establishes. Now remember, the law of privilege in this state, unlike the sole case that the respondent cite in Florida, in a bankruptcy decision in the Brown, the privilege does not migrate, or it isn't waived, or it doesn't somehow vanish because there is a severance of the employment relationship. Chapter 49095 says the client, and the judge agreed that the client in this case is Sands China, has the right to prohibit the disclosure of confidential information by any person. Chapter 49.115 states some exceptions to that. There are four of them listed. Not a one of them applies to this case. The only one that is even tangentially or arguably close with the 49.115 sub 3. And that is simply addresses a dispute between a lawyer and a client. Right. And we don't have that here.
Okay. Mr. Marsh, you have almost 3 minutes left if you'd like to reserve that. And Mr. Beisch, you may proceed.
Again, may it please the court, Todd Beisch on behalf of Stephen Jacobs. Mr. Chief Justice, you made the point earlier in our first argument about when is writ relief appropriate, and I agree that writ relief can be an appropriate issue to address on claims of privilege. But I would submit that in this particular case, it is not appropriate, and I'm somewhat a little bit troubled. My client is troubled by the fact that we are here arguing about this at this point in time, considering that it is, in our view, flatly inconsistent with this court's established precedents for when these types of writs will be entertained. The documents at issue, let's be clear about this. The documents at issue are presently and always have been in Mr. Jacobs' custody, possession, and control. The documents that are at advanced discovery are merely copies. Those documents that are at the third-party vendor are just copies. Mr. Jacobs has the originals, has always had the originals, and has always had use of the originals in this case. That is a fact that is a problem and is being ignored by the petitioners. What I would submit to the court is the principal problem with this writ petition is that it is about 2.5 years late if this is the argument that they wanted to make. Mr. Morris says, well, we did file a lawsuit in September of 2011, and we, this is his words, I wrote it down, negotiated a dismissal of that lawsuit. Well, that's rather incredible since I was the lawyer involved in it, and I can assure the court, we negotiated no such dismissal. It was dismissed by the district court, and a preliminary injunction was sought, which we opposed, and that preliminary injunction was denied. They declined to appeal that. That was an appealable order.
Did you argue lashes in your answer?
We've argued two issues on this. Yes, Your Honor, we've argued estoppel on this point, as well as the fact that it was defective because there was an available legal remedy, and we even filed a supplement on this because this court, about a month after we issued, we submitted our answer, had issued its decision in Bradford versus the 8th Judicial District Court, where this court said, you cannot seek writ relief if you have had an appeal available to address this issue and you failed to appeal. And that is exactly what they did. They filed a separate lawsuit, Las Vegas Sands Corporation, filed a separate lawsuit, sought a preliminary injunction to force my client to turn over the documents to them that they are claiming were covered by not only privilege, but the Macau Data Privacy Act. That injunction was denied. In fact, what the district court said is, the district court gave an interim order, and that interim order is in the record. The interim order says a couple of things. One, for 14 days, Mr. Jacobs couldn't distribute those to anybody else. But the injunction of the interim order did not. It specifically said it did not preclude Mr. Jacobs' counsel from reviewing the documents. They declined to appeal that order. That was an appealable order. And in the closing part of that order, the district court said, this will not be extended in bold letters. What they did is, they came to you on a different writ. You already had a writ on this that was denied. That writ was sought in September of 2011 in the first case. They filed a writ, but this court denied it, making this salient point. Wait, you're seeking a writ in the first case, but you've withdrawn your request in the first case. You haven't shown us you've admitted that you filed a new lawsuit, and you're not here seeking relief in the new lawsuit. So therefore, there's nothing for us to review by way of the writ. So the writ was denied.
Is that lawsuit still pending, Mike?
The lawsuit was dismissed.
How did it get dismissed?
The district court, to sua sponte, ordered it dismissed because when they moved for sanctions against us, saying that we violated the interim order, which we hadn't, and the district court said they sought yet another injunction, and it was denied, and again, they didn't appeal. We're here now.
So the district court dismissed this lawsuit sua sponte without requests for dismissal by either side.
That is correct. That is correct. Because what the district court said, Mr. Chief Justice, is this was an abuse. They were trying to get around adverse rulings in the first action, and they filed a separate lawsuit. And again, this court laid out a roadmap for it. Had they wanted to present this argument, they had the perfect opportunity to do it in September of 2011.
The dismissal, I assume, was without prejudice.
No order was ever entered. It was she at a sanctions hearing, she indicated she was dismissing it. The case has been statistically closed. Our point is this. That order, the denial of the injunction, was appealable. And that, again, the only remedy, the courts are unanimous on this. This is not open to debate. If you claim that your opponent is in possession of your privileged information and that they are not allowed to have it, you have one remedy, and that is to go to court and get it back. You cannot just simply say, well, I assert privilege. The Ninth Circuit has addressed this. Multiple courts have addressed this. You must go to court. You must get an order to retrieve the documents. They filed that, or they sought that relief. It was denied. They never came to you. Even though this is, I believe, now the fifth writ that we've had in this, in this case, so it's not like they are going to follow them. But the point is this. We're now, look at the prejudice to my client. We are now 2.5 years later arguing the same issue that should have been presented to you back in September of 2011. And my client's case has been frozen. He can't do merits discovery, memories are fading, evidence is disappearing, and he's frozen because of these two petitioners' obstructions throughout the jurisdictional discovery process.
If we deny this writ, if we deny the writ,
yes, sir.
And I heard what you said about you need to sue to get the documents back. Aren't we saying that anybody who has a wrongful termination case, and they've got all the documents that they've seen because they work for the employer, that they're entitled to those documents?
No.
Then tell me why not. And in other words, people are going to read, if we write a published decision in this, and we deny the writ, and we say that, that Mr. Jacobs is entitled to these documents, every wrongful termination case will say, hey, my client saw the documents. He had the documents in his possession. He's entitled to the documents.
I disagree with you, Justice Chairman, for two reasons. One, both a procedural issue as well as a substantive issue. On the procedural aspect, it's not only that it's barred because they failed to appeal, it's barred due to estoppel, which I can get to in just a moment. But on the substantive aspect of this, part of the sanctions order over their concealment, again, Mr. Morris says they only learned about this issue much later, around July of 2011. I will tell you that that is a hotly disputed issue. And in fact, the district court has made an observation about that, that one of the reasons, you know, they were concealing the evidence that they had here, it's the same evidence. One of the things that they were doing is they were clandestinely looking at it. So to claim that they didn't know what he had, we dispute that. And what the district court said is part of her sanctions order over this deceit that they had engaged in for a year and a half is you are forbidden from claiming that he is not properly in possession of those documents. Now, jump ahead. This is not a case where someone is simply saying, well, I've got the documents and so therefore I get to use them. This is a case where he claims that he was wrongfully terminated because he knew about improprieties and he had planned to blow the whistle on them. Many of these documents that they want to now say he can't have are in fact emails from him to the company's counsel complaining about some of the very improprieties they are saying he shouldn't be allowed to have. Their communications, Your Honor, that he is privy to, that's, again, an important point of the district court's order. Let's remember at this point, privileges, attorney-client privilege is narrowly construed. It is, this court has said it multiple times, it is an obstruction to the truth. Therefore, it is narrowly construed. The party asserting it has the burden of demonstrating that it applies to bar a particular production in a particular manner, and that any doubts about that are resolved in favor of disclosure. Applying that test here, it's fairly, I think, quite easy to see why the district court came out where it came out on this. They presented nothing. Not a single declaration in their support of their position that he can't have documents and can't use documents that he's had the entire time. That they sought no viable form of relief from. Let me jump back again to just the estoppel point, Justice Cherry. When they were here, when they came to you in September of 2011 and sought the writ, citing, by the way, the exact same cases that they're citing today, each of them, which I will address you momentarily, addressing that, this court said you can't do that because you didn't seek relief, you withdrew your request for relief in the first case, and you haven't shown us that in the new lawsuit you filed, the district court won't give you relief. Well, the minute that the district court didn't give them relief, they were obligated to come back to you, which they didn't. So now, 2.5 years later, here we are, and my client has been, again, had his case sabotaged by their own inaction. And that is not allowed. This court has said that multiple times. You are being asked to create a new rule for these two litigants, and these two litigants, which the district court has found, have engaged in unprecedented discovery misconduct in terms of hiding evidence. If there is anyone who is unworthy of a new rule to accommodate what they were doing, I would submit it is the petitioner. But let's assume for the sake of argument that there wasn't a bar to this writ petition due to estoppel or due to the fact that they had declined to appeal from the second lawsuit that they had filed. Let's just turn to what they want to debate, which is when does a privilege apply and when doesn't it apply, and when can a former executive, this is not a former employee, just a former employee, this is a former board member, chief executive officer, oversees all aspects of the company and its operations and would thus deal with the general counsel and the lawyers on a daily, intimate basis.
How do we make an order denying this and allowing them to keep the documents, 11,000 documents, in a half-hour argument? I mean, how do they have 11,000 documents? Some, I worry about relevancy. I do worry about maybe some are privileged. It just amazes me that we're talking about 11,000 documents and the judge hasn't seen the documents.
Justice Cherry, and I think the answer to that is fairly straightforward. That's why you have a district court judge who has been hearing this matter. And what her point was, she's been hearing this matter now for 2 years with respect to these documents and these claims by them, which they did not present. And under the law, what she has said is, and there is case law, ample case law to support it, we cited the Greenberg decision from New York that says, if these are documents that, let's assume for the sake of argument that they're privileged, but these are high-ranking executives that were involved in the creation of these documents and assuming that they are privileged, they are still entitled to be able to use them or access them for purposes of litigation where they are being accused of something. They have filed a counterclaim against Mr. Jacobs. He is entitled to defend himself and expose this nonsense about what was going on by these two petitioners in Macau.
He needs 11,000 documents to do this.
I don't know if he needs all 11,000 of them, but what I would say is there was never a single piece of evidence presented to the district court, not one, saying that these documents did not relate to the claims and defenses in this case. This is their burden. Let's remember that. This is the petitioner's burden, asserting privilege, to say and to present the evidence to the district court saying, here, these particular class of documents don't have anything to do with this case. They don't even fit within the scope of any of these cases. They decided not to do that. They took this approach. They made a strategic decision. It's an all or nothing proposition. And now they're saying, well, there's 11,000 of them. But you were the party asserting the claim of privilege, and you decided not to present a lick of evidence to the district court.
Well, all my colleagues here have been district court judges. We've all handled conflicts litigation. And I can't wait to go to the conference as to what we would do if we were presented with the issue of 11,000 documents. And we do like seeing Mr. Morris and you on these writs, and we've given you as much as we can as far as your ability to test the discovery and everything else in this case. But I just want you to understand, I'm a little troubled by, in a half-hour argument, saying to you, you get the 11,000 documents, or saying to Mr. Morris, you get the 11,000 documents. Oh, we're talking about 11,000 documents. I mean, that's overwhelming to me.
I am overwhelming, Justice Chair, but he's had them the whole time. He's had them the whole time. So, and this lawsuit was filed in 2010, and it's frozen in its tracks because the petitioners want it that way. We can't get any basic discovery done. We can't proceed with the jurisdictional hearing. All because of the, and as the district court said, because they didn't even challenge these claims. Look at it from this standpoint, what courts have said. Once they created this privilege law, what did they do with it? Did they go to the district court and say, well, now we know there's 11,000 documents we're claiming privilege over. Here's our motion. We want to recover those documents. No. We're the ones, because the petitioner's position is they will delay. We're the ones who had to bring this issue to the district court's attention, even though our client still has and has always had the documents. That is a basic violation of what every court says, that if you are the party claiming the privilege, you must act immediately. You cannot simply delay and then hope that the other side doesn't use them against you. I'm out of time. I thank the court for its attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bias. Mr. Morris, let me ask you if we can maybe tackle this issue of the other lawsuit. The injunction was denied, the availability of to have a direct appeal on that order denying the preliminary injunction. Would that preclude this writ here?
I'm glad you asked that question, because we addressed this specifically at pages 12 and 13 of our reply brief, because it comes in reply to the argument that was just presented about the second lawsuit. Here's why we filed this second lawsuit and then later dismissed it. First, the district court expressed some doubt that under your order, she could review documents for the assertion of privilege, because we're only here on jurisdictional issues. But she nevertheless restrained in the second lawsuit the delivery of those documents to Mr. Jacobs. The lawsuit that was refiled was objected to by Jacobs. His position in that lawsuit, articulated by Mr. Bice and Mr. Pizzanelli, was that the second lawsuit was improper because the defendant's privileges that we are claiming here in this proceeding are issues for the other case. That's this case. There's a record site to support this. You can look at it. The district court decided, to the extent permitted under the stay order, it would address the use of the documents in jurisdictional discovery before the evidentiary hearing on the jurisdictional issues in this case. And following that, she said, I want you folks to agree, the parties to agree, on a protocol to inspect these documents, to preserve them and inspect them, and then come back to me. And on that basis, yes, that second lawsuit was dismissed, and this issue of privileged documents that we're addressing here moved into this court. And it was, as you said, without prejudice. These are her words, without prejudice for you, meaning the defendants and the petitioners here, to pursue it as a discovery dispute related to the jurisdictional evidentiary hearing issue in this case. So, we did that.
Now, was this the hearing on the permanent injunction and the preliminary injunction combined under Rule 65, or was it just a preliminary injunction hearing that was denied?
I don't know that. I don't know that answer. But I would say, and I'll close with these remarks, I know my time is up. Jacobs turned this data over, in which we called the 11,000 documents, on May 20, 2012, to advance discovery, as to the court order. The protocol called for us to review them for privilege and identify those documents for which we claim the privilege. We did for 11,000 of the hundreds of thousands of documents that we examined. After we went through that procedure and did that culling, produced privilege logs to justify what we were doing and telling her why they were privileged, she then said, it doesn't make any difference because Jacobs has had something that she knew from day one needed to. He took these documents with him when he left her employ, and he has them now. So what's the big deal? I will just disregard the protocol I have set. I will disregard the hundreds of thousands of dollars you spent to call these documents and look at them and present them to me with privilege logs, and I will just order the privilege waived.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Morris. Mr. Bice, again, for the excellent arguments and briefs. We will do our best to move on these cases, move this case along for both parties, and we will take it under submission at this time.